Well, what if I told you that I had a gift for you that was likely to increase your lifespan, your quality of life, your enjoyment of community and connection, and it would actually form you more into the person you were created to be? How would you respond? Would you say, yeah, or would you say, like, yeah, I've also got some great oceanfront property for you in Arizona, Andrew. I would love to introduce you. There are no oceans in Arizona, so oceanfront property. Anyways, we'll get to the joke later. It's not that funny anyways. Anyway, so if I told you, would you say that's crazy? Would you say, yes, automatic? What is it that you would do if this type of gift was real? What would you do to receive this gift and to protect this gift? Well, we are in week 3 of our series entitled Rooted Families, where we are looking at spiritual practices that we can engage in with our families or with a small group or with a group of close friends that will help us experience the transformation God desires for our lives to become the kind of people that He created us to be. And today we're talking about the kind of gift that I just described. A gift that may sound too good to be true. And my hope today is to do really 4 things. One, to convince you that this gift really is that good. Number 2, to let you know that objections or pushback to this kind of gift have been true throughout history. Number 3, to convince you that you can actually take steps towards this gift over the next week. And number 4, to convince you that it's worth committing to taking those steps before you leave the room today. So, what is this gift we're talking about? It's rest. Or more specifically, Sabbath. The idea of Sabbath rest being something that is a gift from God that we receive when we obey a command that He gave to His people. It's a gift that God actually wove into the creation story as part of a weekly rhythm of stopping from regular labor to rest, enjoy, and worship. And as we trace the story of Sabbath throughout Scripture, I want us to see that rather than being something that is a limitation on life that just tries to make life harder and gives us a bunch of things not to do, it actually serves as a gift to free us to live like we were created to. Now, just to maybe understand a little bit of the context that this idea comes from, I want us to think about the ancient Near East. This was the culture that the Old Testament bubbled up out of. And in that place, there was a common idea that the gods that created the world did so almost like the cosmos, the world, being like a temple for the gods to enjoy. So the reason that the world existed was that, and as people were created, they were created primarily to serve the gods and to be beneficial to the gods. Like, this was the purpose of creation. So the world was this temple for God. People were put there just to serve the gods' needs, and that was it. And this idea of the God's relationship with creation being strictly about having their needs met was disrupted in a significant way when we come to the story that's told in Genesis about creation. See, Genesis tells us that in the beginning, God created all things and all things good. And if you jump ahead to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, we see that God created people to steward God's creation. Another way to put it would be that God created people to create and cultivate. So the idea that we were created to create and cultivate, this means that the work that you do day in and day out, if it's expressing God's creativity in the world, if it's cultivating what He's put in you and what is around you, that gives dignity and value to the work we do day in and day out. It's part of what we were created for. But rather than creation being simply about fulfilling God's needs or simply being about His benefit by us creating and cultivating, Genesis actually focuses on how creation was given in a lot of ways to serve the needs and created to be beneficial to the people that God placed there. The story of creation culminates in Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3 with these words. It says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work He had made, the work He had been doing. So on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now, just before this, we learned that, this world that these verses bubble up out of, in that world, the idea of creation and why it is that things were created, the common understanding, again, was that creation came out of chaos. And the creation of humanity was almost like an accident, or it was just something that sort of happened because of this cosmic battle going on, and people come along and out of that, again, people are just designed to serve the gods of the world. But in the world, but in Scripture, we see that God created people intentionally in His image. At the same time, again, in a world that said that that people were only created to serve the needs of God, here in Genesis, we see that people were created to actually enjoy resting and being with God. God created the world to share his joy with people. So the first thing I want us to see about rest is this. It's that rest is a gift from God woven into the design of creation so we can enjoy him. You see, rest was baked into creation as a gift, and God models this pattern of rest as a normal part of a week. And in the day of rest, we see that God created people to work from rest rather than for rest. You see, people began not by going out and creating and cultivating, but people were created on day six, and then their first full day on earth, what did they do? Rest. You all did much better than 9 a.m. At 9 a.m., I had to say it starts with R and ends in S to get people to say rest, right? They rested on their first full day. People didn't operate from this place where they worked so that they could finally rest. No, they began with rest and worked from that place. They worked from their rest rather than for their rest. And do you notice maybe how different that is from the way that you've been trained to think about rest in your own life? This story was disruptive for those in the ancient Near East, and I think it's really disruptive for us as well. I mean, how often do you think about rest as being what fuels your function in the world versus your function in the world being what earns the right to rest? Okay, let's think about that again for a second. How often do you think as rest being the thing that fuels the way you function in the world, it fuels your contribution to the world, that comes out of your rest versus your function and your usefulness to the world being what earns you the right to rest? I had someone come up to me after 9 a.m. that said that they heard someone else put it like this. We can get to this point where we begin to think of rest as a sin. This idea that I've not justified my existence enough to rest. And yet in creation, we see it flipped around. We see that we actually work from our rest. And yet if you look at the world around us, there's this idea that we work for the weekend, right? We got to get all our work done so that then on the weekend we can finally rest. Or we work throughout our life so that one day we can retire and enjoy what is to come. Or maybe all the parenting work, you know, you do that now whenever you've got younger kids up until they become adults, and then things just become easier, right? Parents of adult children, it just gets right? I've been told that's a lie. But the reality is, I think if you look at each of those things, none of those truths probably end up working themselves in our own life. At least in my own life, I quote unquote can work for the weekend and then find all the work I need to do on the weekend that I wasn't able to do during the week. And then I find my weekend being just preparing to make it through the next week. And then I get to the weekend again and it's like, oh wait, I need to recover. Like how, it's just this never ending cycle. In the same way, there are ways in which we can work for retirement and so spend ourselves by the time we get to retirement, it's like, I just want to sit here. Like I don't want to do anything, right? So this pattern of seeing that we are just working to earn rest will leave us feeling empty. And yet God invites us to see this idea of Sabbath as a weekly rhythm, reminding us that it is from the place of rest that we were created to function in the world. But if you look back at creation, rather than rest with God, humanity sought to live independent of God and to create maybe a limitless life for how they functioned in the world. And I just wonder, do you notice the same tendency in your own life? I know I have this horrible tendency that I can use to try to justify my existence. And it's not something I would normally consciously say out loud. But as I was reflecting this week, I realized that it can be very true about the way that I live week in and week out. Now, my family and I have tried for probably the last 5 or 6 years to have a weekly Sabbath that is Friday evening through dinner on Saturday. And what happens during that time is that, like if I'm preaching on a weekend, I don't look at any message stuff from Friday night through Saturday night. That stuff is sort of off limits. And this week was a little bit crazy. I ended up, had the honor of doing a wedding this weekend. And so that meant Friday evening was a wedding rehearsal. And then yesterday was the wedding and the reception. And I got myself frenzied all week. Like, I don't know how many people I told this week, this is the wrong week for me to preach on Sabbath. Just the other day, I was stuck maybe on Wednesday, and I went to Luke, our worship leader, and I was like, dude, I am so stuck. I cannot get past this point in this message. And he goes, have you tried resting? And my initial response was, I don't have time to rest, Luke. This isn't going to work out. There are too many things to get done this week. And yet I realized on Friday that my framing was complete. Like, I still had from Friday after the reception until Saturday at 3 o'clock that I didn't have to do anything. I had convinced myself that because my week is so busy and so crazy, I had to fill that time because life is crazy. And when life's crazy, there's no time to pause. And so I had to have this gut check where I said, okay, from Friday evening when I get home until Saturday at noon, I'm not going to do anything. And then my mom sent me a text on Friday and was like, hey, I'm praying that you're able to enjoy your Sabbath this week or whatever. And I was like, well, I kind of got a busy weekend. She goes, you know, wedding can be a celebration too. And so the beautiful thing was it actually reframed how I even thought about my evening last night. Like, I got to go and celebrate a wedding with somebody, which became more restful whenever I was thinking that this is actually celebrating and feasting, which is part of what God created us to do with people. None of that was in my notes, so this may take me a minute to get back on track. But what I know is that if you look at my life when I'm trying to justify my existence, what I can often do is I can fill my schedule in such a way that I can look back at it at the end and say, look at my schedule and look at how many meaningful things I am doing. So Sunday night, I make sure I'm good to go for the week ahead. On Monday night, okay, let's get a small group. Okay, Tuesday night, let's meet with some leaders from the area to talk about different things going on in nonprofits. Wednesday, well, got a church event. Thursday, oh, there's a board meeting. And I can fill my days like this all week long, week in and week out, if I'm not intentional to protect sometimes. And what I've found is that I begin to find my identity in how productive and available I am. And I begin to seek to be like God instead of enjoying being with God. This is a tendency I can have week in and week out. But here's something that hit me this week from some notes by a guy named Michael Morales. He pointed out that the climax of creation was not creating people so that they could create and cultivate. Rather, the climax of creation is humanity sharing a day of rest with God as God rested from his work on the seventh day. That was the culmination, the high point of creation. The work was done, and God set his work aside even and enjoyed being with his people. But seeking to be limitless like God rather than enjoying being with God, that's what happened with humanity in the beginning that led to all the brokenness in our world. But the beautiful thing is that God did not give up on his desire to have a people who would live with him in a special relationship. He created this again through the family line of a guy named Abram, which became the people of Israel. And if you fast forward a little bit from the time of Abraham, you see the people of Israel end up spending 400 years in slavery. And as they are in slavery, they begin to have this thing ingrained in them where their value, the value of their existence, is measured by the level of their productivity. That's what's true for people living in slavery, right? Their entire worth, their entire value comes from how productive they are in their lives. And as God rescues and redeems them from slavery, part of what God does, if you look through the story of Exodus, and you even look through the story of the three books that follow that in the first five books of the Bible, if you look through that section, part of what God is doing is he's trying to train these people who have lived in slavery for 400 years what it looks like to live as the free people of God who have God living in their midst. God's trying to train them to do that. And so you look to Exodus chapter 20, and here you have the Ten Commandments given. And the fourth command says this in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in six days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." As these people were coming out of slavery, God makes something clear. His design for Sabbath was still true. And if they were going to enjoy being with him, you go back to Exodus chapter 19, verses 4 through 6, and as God carries them out of Egypt, it says that he brought them to himself. And he begins to make this covenant, and he outlines what this special relationship with him will look like. And if you notice in that command wasn't just centered upon an individual. It wasn't just centered upon you as an individual enjoying this gift from God, but who was it that was going to benefit and enjoy the Sabbath? Let's look at that again. It says, "On it, you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servants, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your town." Now, I highlight this to make a point. The gift of Sabbath blesses not only God's people, but also all who encounter God's people in relationship with him. The Sabbath day is not something for those who are privileged to enjoy at the cost of other people who have to work to make this possible for them. No, this is something that God gives to people. And he calls his people not just to make sure they can observe it, but to make sure that those who are powerless in their community have the opportunity to do this as well. So how does this apply to us today? Well, if you're in here today and you are a leader in any sort of organization, think about it. How is it that your communication rhythms or the boundaries that you allow your employees to have, how is it that you are actually creating space for them to enjoy God's design? Or is it just about how much you can get out of them? See, we need to recognize that as Christians in the world, we have a level of influence and we can shape the way that people around us enjoy and experience the world. We can give them a taste of what it is that God desired for them. And this Sabbath was a taste of that for the people of Israel week in and week out. And note again that this gift wasn't just for the powerful. It was for the servant, the stranger, and foreigner among the people. There is a communal gift of rest found in the Sabbath. Do you notice any difference, once again, about how it is that maybe you're trained to think about rest? For the people of Israel, rest was not for only for when everything on the to-do list was complete. Rest was part of the rhythm that told the to-do list that it was not the God that you worship or the source of your identity. Rather, you're choosing to enjoy the God that you worship and to receive your identity from him. But do we recognize actually the goodness of this gift of rest? See, once again, we need to see this about rest. Rest is a gift from God that in Christ we have been set free to receive and enjoy. Just like the people of Israel, as they were set free from slavery, rest was reiterated. The same thing is true for us as we seek to live. Because of what's true in Christ, we too are able to rest because our identity and our value in the world is not based upon how productive we are in a given week. Rather, it's found in who Christ is and what he has done for us. We'll talk more here in a minute about how hard we have to work the other 6 days to make this idea of Sabbath rest possible, but I don't want us to miss that this is a gift that we've been set free to enjoy. So what might this look like in practice? Well, we'll talk about that here in a minute. First, I just want to name that, again, Sabbath rest has been disruptive throughout history, but I think that it is particularly challenging for us in some ways today in our culture, because we live in a time where technology has made it possible for us to be productive or to be connected to work 24 hours a day. Right now, there's a good chance that you have a phone in your pocket that is a more powerful productivity tool than the average worker had in the 20th century throughout much of that entire century, right? There's more you can do on your phone right now. In fact, there have probably been times, even so far this morning as I've been preaching, where you're like, work emails would be more productive than listening to you. Delete, 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 right? Because we can do that at any point. I'm not exempt from that. There's this idea that at any point I can grab my phone and be productive. Anytime I can do that. We live in a time where through much of history, work was confined to a place, right? So throughout much of history, if you worked in a field, it wasn't like you're sitting there at the dinner table and you're like, let's pull out the phone and plant the seeds. No, like that's not how farming worked, right? That's not how things were set up. It was confined to a place. In the same way, throughout a lot of history, maybe there was even a desk involved, but it wasn't like, oh, I just had a thought to finish out that report. Let me type this out real quick on my phone. No, it was like, I need ink and pen to do this, right? So throughout much of history, work was tied to a place. Now work is just tied to a person. So anywhere you are, if you have the technology, you can contribute to the work that you do in the world. This is true for students, and it's also true for those that are even retired. You're still connected to different things that are work or labor in your life, even now. This is part of the reality of the world we live in. And without intentionality, what you will find is that you will constantly be available to everyone, but never be present with anyone. Say it again. You will always be available to everyone at any moment and yet never present with a person right in front of you. Never present, maybe even with God. You can be constantly available to be productive, but rarely present or aware of God's presence with you. And that is part of what God's gift of rest helps address. So what does Sabbath look like? This is not prescriptive. This is just what it looks like in the Bondurant household. So for us, again, Friday evening through Saturday evening is typically our Sabbath rhythm. We have this fancy little Sabbath box. You don't need this to Sabbath. Let me just say that up front. But it's helpful for us. So Saturday evening all the way through Friday evening, right? Here's what our Sabbath box says. It says, create and cultivate. What that does is it reminds us that the work we do day in and day out is a good God-given work to do. Our work has dignity and value. It is purposeful. Like, don't just dread work. That's a gift from God. But on Saturday, what we do, or Friday night or Saturday morning, depending on when our kids remind us that we forgot to do it, we open up the Sabbath box. And what we do is we turn it to this other side that says stop and enjoy. So this is what pops up for us on Sunday. And then what we do is in the box, we put some things that represent work. So oftentimes my phone goes into this box on Saturday. So if you text me on Saturday, there's a decent chance I don't see it. Okay. Not really sorry. I was going to say sorry, but that wouldn't be true. My son will sometimes put homework in here. My daughter put her worksheet from homework in there a couple weeks ago, and that's still in there. So that goes in here. Sometimes it's a computer charger, whatever it is. Things that represent the labor that we do day in and day out, they go here, and then we flip to the stop and enjoy side. And so then what we do is we actually build out a plan for what it looks like for us to stop and enjoy one another and to stop and enjoy the gifts that God has given us in our life. A lot of times for us, that means taking a bike ride or going for a jog to a park and enjoying that part of our lives. Sometimes that means sharing a meal with friends. One of my favorite times was just getting together with a friend and her son, and we got together and we shared brunch together. I loved that Sabbath day. Sometimes it's oftentimes the morning is something with the family, and then oftentimes in the afternoon we'll be like, okay, kids, you guys can go Sabbath with a book or, you know, whatever. Like, we'll give you some time on the Switch, whatever it is, and we break away from that and have some time to read or do other things that refresh and recharge us. But what I found is that Sabbath often works best when we include other people in our lives. But you know what else I know whenever we include other people in our lives, including my own kids or my wife, or whenever my wife includes me? It makes things messier, right? So whenever you're thinking about Sabbath and you think about this Sabbath box, the 5 minutes that we try to take to get things set up could probably be 3 minutes and sometimes takes 20 minutes, right, to get everybody just kind of through the thing. But one of the prayers that came from this box that we will say often on Sabbath day is this: God, we thank you for the Sabbath day. Help us to rest and enjoy what you've made. And then that sort of starts our day, and then we wrap it up with a different little prayer. But this is where Saturdays sort of often start. Now, do you think that there's like never anything that comes up on a Saturday that we could choose to do that is outside of this? Just recently, I had an invitation to I'm on the board of a local organization. We're trying to connect with 3 or 4 other organizations and get a large group of people together. And there was a message sent out with 7 different times where we could meet. And the only one that had everyone available so far, whenever I opened it up, was Saturday at noon. And I immediately feel this incredible pressure of, I'm the only one so far not available during this time. And so I ended up marking it as not being available. And I was grateful to recognize there were a couple people after me that marked that too. But that was a moment in my heart where I said, you know, it's really easy to say, yeah, sure, I can do that on Saturday. But one of the things that we have as a family is this is a priority. Now, there are times where we've had to break out of that norm because of a commitment here or a commitment there. That's not something that we feel like is like judgment forever. But if and when there are other options, we do everything we can to protect that time for us to stop and enjoy the gift of Sabbath as a family. So again, you can enjoy this with others. I enjoy feasting on Sabbath days. I enjoy good food, and so that is a wonderful gift. And some Jewish communities refer to the Sabbath as Thanksgiving every week because it's a chance to share with community good food and also just that family connection. Like, I love Thanksgiving Day. It's my favorite holiday. Imagine that every week, and only you're inviting in other people from your community into that space. So as we're thinking about Sabbath, one of the things I would encourage you to think about is not only the time and place that you want to do it, but who is it in your life that you can invite in to Sabbath with you? See, another thing I want us to see about the gift of rest is this: that rest is a gift from God to those he loves, bringing refreshment and restoration to our mind, body, and soul. This rest is a gift from God given to us, and it actually transforms and shapes us. And this gift of rest is not the same as vegging out for a period of time. I remember my wife and I regularly have this conversation of like, how on earth did we not solve world hunger before we had kids? Because it seems like time just goes out of the way. But I remember why that is. It's because there would be Saturdays where we would get up and from like 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. we would like stream an entire season of a show. And it was like, oh, that was something. But you know what I realized as I look back on those times? There was very rarely a time where he finished the season. I got up and I was like, man, I feel refreshed and recharged. It was like, no, I need a nap. I just spent all day watching this show and now I'm not replenished. So whenever we're thinking about rest, think about the kinds of things that God has put in your life that rejuvenate you and allow you to enjoy other people around you. It's not just about vegging out. It's actually about engaging in restorative practices with God and with other people. As the people of Israel went into the land or were preparing to go into the promised land, we see in Deuteronomy chapter 5 that God gives another reason to Sabbath. The reasoning there, the motivation he provides there in Deuteronomy chapter 5 is as a way to mark and remember their redemption from slavery in Egypt. It was a way for them to remember and mark the fact that they were a redeemed people. And so that's one of the things that we can reflect on even in our Sabbath rest, So yesterday morning, my wife and kids were out of town, and so I spent much of my morning, I don't normally have that time and space, reflecting upon the fact that God had redeemed me and set me free from sin. That's now true about me. That's not something I often have extended time to think about, and yet yesterday, I was powerfully reminded about that reality. See, there's one more truth about Sabbath, and it's this, that rest is a gift from God, given so we can enjoy union and fellowship with him. It's not just about us or about those around us, but it's actually about us enjoying God. As you think about the idea of Sabbath, it may seem like a little much. I mean, who has a day each week to commit to enjoying God and one another? Now, at the risk of sounding simplistic, I hope you know my heart in this. I'll just say this, and this is something I'm saying to myself as much as to you. Who is it that has a day each week to commit to enjoying God and others? Those who choose to prioritize and protect it. See, there are all kinds of things we choose to prioritize and protect in our lives. Sometimes that's a certain work schedule, right? Like there's a way in which I protect my work schedule because I like working and I like being productive. So if someone asks me, hey, can you come do this at this time? If I've got things going on at work, oftentimes it's like, oh no, I've got responsibilities. I've got things I need to make sure I accomplish. Not saying that's always healthy, but I oftentimes prioritize and protect that in a way that's not always healthy. What if we had that type of perspective towards rest and Sabbath, where we were willing to prioritize and protect it even when it was hard? You see, observing Sabbath doesn't come simply or naturally. It requires trust, faith, dependence, hard work, and boundaries. And I'm not saying that, again, this has to start with or be a full day each week or else God's going to smite you, that type of thing. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is that if we will find ways to prioritize and protect Sabbath in our life, I really do believe it's this good gift that will extend life, that will increase your enjoyment of life. It will increase your connection and the way that you enjoy community, because that's what God made it to be. It was never easy. It was never something that simply happened. I mean, just think about Israel. Israel was an agrarian society, which meant that their lives were sort of built around the planting and harvesting season. And you know what God was calling them to do? If it was Friday night going into Saturday and it had rained all day on Friday and Saturday was the day that they could best plant the field, guess what they did on Saturday? They rested. And they trusted that the work would get done at another time. If it was harvest time, and things had looked really rough up till that day, and then the Sabbath day is the beautiful day for this to happen. You know what they did? They rested, and they trusted God with the rest. They created these boundaries around this day to try to honor the rest that God was inviting them into. It required hard work the other 6 days to complete the work that provided for the family to be able to keep the house in order. It required boundaries being put up, and it will require the same for you. One of the challenges that we see, though, is if you look throughout the story of the Old Testament, there was never a time where the people of God seemed to have fully enjoyed this gift of Sabbath like God designed. And so we see Jesus come on the scene, and by that point, there were religious leaders who had set up all of these extra boundaries around the Sabbath just to protect you from maybe interrupting this gift of Sabbath. And so this led to a lot of conflict between Jesus and religious leaders, because there were times on the Sabbath day where Jesus was walking through fields with his disciples, and they would pluck grain and eat it, and meeting this basic human need of food, and Jesus didn't smite his disciples, so that upset the religious leaders. Where Jesus would be hanging out in the synagogue, enjoying learning from the Torah, the Word of God at that time. And as he was there in that space, someone would come who needed healing. And Jesus would heal them and restore their body, restore their relationship even to God in a unique way. And people would get upset because that's work and this is a Sabbath. You can't do that kind of work. Where there was a time where he met a man and told him to pick up his mat and go home on the Sabbath. And people got upset because he picked up his mat on the Sabbath. He broke the Sabbath, right? And what Jesus said is in Mark chapter 2, verses 27b through 28, is this, that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Here what Jesus is pointing out is that the Sabbath day is for these rejuvenating, replenishing type opportunities. And so even if it looks a little bit different, like, again, if someone calls me on Saturday and says, hey, I've got a flat tire, I'm here on the side of the road, my typical response is not going to be like, sorry, it's the Sabbath day, that sounds like work. Hope you find someone else. Call AAA, make sure they don't get a Sabbath, right? No, like we're still called to love and care for one another. That's not the idea here. This idea is that it is a gift from God where we cease from our normal labor to enjoy God and to enjoy each other and to enjoy the unique rest and relationship we have with God. And for us in the New Testament, this is even a greater truth that we are able to experience. Here's what the author of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 4, verses 8 through 11. He says, for if Joshua had given them rest, talking about the people of Israel when they went into the promised land, God would not have spoken later about another day. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their work, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. He points out here that we've been given an incredible gift of resting and enjoying God in his presence as being part of the people of God because of what Jesus has done. That's not a rest that's tied to just one day a week. We're able to enjoy God's presence day in and day out. We have 24/7 access to God. But rather than that making it so that the Sabbath has no bearing, or the principle of Sabbath, I should say, has no bearing, I think we need to see that this increases our incentive to protect time to enjoy this rest and to see the world enjoy it too. To see the world enjoy this gift. Again, the Sabbath isn't just an individual thing. If we choose to prioritize Sabbath rest and to see those around us brought into that as well, then we are going to see maybe some transformation happen in the communities around us. As we add dignity and worth to others, as we invite them in to a place of rest. So if you're thinking about what this looks like in life, I would challenge or encourage you to think about even your regular rhythms of this. Each day you can get a taste of this. What would it look like to take your phone when you get home, maybe at 5 o'clock, and say from 5 to 8 o'clock, I'm disconnected from my phone. I'm saying that I'm not going to be available for everyone so I can be present where I am right now. What could that look like? What if you were going out with some friends and what you guys chose to begin doing was during your meal together, someone collected all the phones and they hid them under the table so that you were engaging with each other and enjoying each other and the gift that God has given you. And that became just a normal daily rhythm, that's what happened. On a weekly rhythm, what would it look like to begin protecting 2 hours a week if a full day isn't feasible? Or a morning a week? Or a full day? Yearly, what would it look like for you to be intentional with what vacation even looks like to say this is about replenishing and rejuvenating in a way that God designed? So I'm going to enjoy God and others during this time. How would this begin disrupting our broken ways of relating to our work? Maybe you would see that you have value beyond your ability to produce 24 hours a day. You have value beyond being available 24 hours a day. Maybe it allowed you to receive the immense freedom of someone coming to you and asking the question, hey, how are you? How are things going? And instead of responding with the natural, oh, they're busy, like what would that person do? And what would you feel inside if you responded with rested? That, are you allowed to say that? Like, is that an okay thing to say? Rejuvenated, joyful. See, we are not confined to live at the same pace maybe that the world tells us we have to live at. It requires us choosing a different set of priorities, and yet I think it's a chance to enjoy the gift that God has given us. And so if you're looking for a next step here, there are two things I would encourage you towards. One would be on the sermon resource page. So if you go to cccgo.com/info and click on sermon resources, there's a PDF there called Slow Down Summer or something like that from Practicing the Way. It's designed to have you intentionally think about the months of June and July and what it would look like to begin slowing down in your own life intentionally. So consider that. A second thing would be to go into this reflection time we're going to provide right now and actually commit to protecting a time and space sometime in the next 2 weeks to begin practicing Sabbath in your own life. So I'm going to give you 90 seconds to reflect on these four questions. One, how much time are you willing to commit to protecting in the next 2 weeks? Two, when will you schedule this time? Three, who will you include? And number four may take a little longer than 90 seconds to answer, but what will you say no to during this time? If you rehearse or practice the no before you have to say it, it becomes a lot easier to say in the moment. So I'm going to give you 90 seconds to reflect on these and hopefully create some answers, and then we are going to respond to God by telling him we're making room for him to do whatever he wants. We're choosing to trust him. So take 90 seconds and reflect on these questions.